mic on.
Okay, folks, we're going to get started in a moment.
You're right.
Check.
All right, is anyone opening or am I just taking over?
Wayne.
Okay.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the September 11th, 2019 special meeting of the City of Kingston Planning Board. We're going to begin the meeting with the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. And folks, if we could just take a moment of silence as we remember events that occurred 18 years ago on September 11th, taking the lives of people in New York City, Washington, D.C., and Shanksville, Pennsylvania. Thank you, folks. Okay, we'll begin with introductions. My name is Wayne Platt, Jr. I'm the chairman. We also have members Robert Jacobson, Mary Jo Wiltshire, Matt Gillis, Kevin Roach. We also have the planning director, Suzanne Cahill, Kyla Dede, the assistant planner. We have Alderman Reynolds Scott Childress, who's the common council liaison to the planning board, and Danielle Gartenstein, assistant corporation counsel. In case of emergency, there's exits at either side of the council chambers. If there's a matter that we have to evacuate, we're going to use the stairs. Bathrooms are out that door over there. And at this time, I'll ask folks to silence their cell phones. And if there's a need to have a conversation, there are conference rooms on either door for the council chambers here, too. And as always, I ask that we respect the speakers.
This chair is getting out.
All right. Regular business, item number one. This is an open public speaking. We allocate 15 minutes for this process. Doesn't necessarily have to do with anything that's on our agenda. And I want to remind folks that tonight's meeting is not a public hearing for the Kingstonian project. So any comments that are made during the open public speaking will not become part of the official record. Is this the podium we're going to use for?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know if you have to close up anything there, Joe. You good? All right. If there's anybody interested in speaking, the microphone is up here. If you could just identify yourselves. And I'm not sure how many folks are going to be speaking tonight, but okay. If it's possible to keep your comments to 3 minutes, how's that sound?
Be good? Less than that.
All right.
Okay. My name is Gay Galitzin. I live on Glen Street in Kingston. I'm also affiliated with Kingston Transition. As a resident who cares about Kingston and all its residents, I believe the Kingston... I believe the Kingstonian must include affordable housing. I'm proud to be living in Kingston, which has been awarded the silver level of climate smart communities and plans to get the gold level as a model city of energy, environmental, and economic sustainability by 2020. I'm saddened, however, that the city and its planning board is not taking a stronger stand, is not the leader it claims to be when it comes to demanding commitment to modeling 21st century green initiatives in what is probably the most significant development in the city since the Rondout's urban development of the 1960s. The statement by the architects in response to the planning board's request for a list of sustainable features shows an appalling lack of interest and commitment in combating the climate crisis that is hurtling towards us at an increasingly alarming rate. Nowhere do they offer any high-efficiency design or construction techniques, of which there are many already tried and tested. Without these and energy-efficient equipment, the buildings will probably exceed the state's greenhouse emission goals and need expensive refurbishment within a few years. There is no attempt at a fossil-free environment, no attempt to use either solar or geothermal energy, no attempt to be a net zero energy project. They offer LEED accredited staff who will review appropriate features. Absolutely no hint that there is any commitment to even the basic green initiatives. Not even LED lighting is mentioned. This much heralded development is nothing more than a basic, as we were, tick all the boxes, 20th century building. And here we are approaching the third decade of the 21st century. The City of Kingston, its planning board, where is your much touted leadership in the energy, environmental, and economic sustainability? It is not enough to consider green building. You need to commit to these features in this and all future developments. And I thank you for allowing me to say what I wanted to say.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ilona Ross, 48 Third Avenue, Kingston, New York. There are scholarly studies that show that when a planning board supports a project, CECRA tends to be sidestepped, and that the planning board does not honor CECRA fully as it should. From what I've seen so far, I've seen several examples of that. I hope it does not continue. In addition to what Gay said, I would like to point out that I don't know why the planning board and not me was able to look at the green letter to see that the IECC recommendations for 2015, the standards that you were going to follow, that you pledged to follow on the one hand, but then on the other hand, you pledged to consider 49 roof, which is part of those standards. I don't know why it takes someone like me to read these things. I also don't know why the engineer of the project has been producing studies that are being used by the planning board to make a decision. It would seem to me that that's equivalent to having, you know, the fox tell his cousins exactly how they should divide up the chickens in the hen house. I'm embarrassed to be a Democrat by this process. I'm embarrassed by the American political system that allows planning boards to not follow the process that they should follow. You should know that there are other cities, Plattsburgh, Oneonta, Glens Falls, Watertown, that are organizing to hire lawyers to fight projects that benefit the developers but do not benefit the citizens. In too many areas, this project does not benefit the citizens. And the CECRA process is being completely violated by the Soviet-style disappearance of documents that are legitimate and that are from a legitimate commission, and the replacement with sanitized and massaged documents written by substitutes who are very involved in the political process. These procedurally, I mean, substantively, it's insane. Procedurally, it's insane also. I don't know why we are worried about the swamp in Washington when we have a swamp that smells just as badly right here in Kingston.
Thank
30
you.
30 seconds.
Okay. Next speaker. Okay. You going to speak?
Yep.
Okay.
My name is Jane Eisenberg. I live at
pull it down.
148 Ledge Road. I'm very much in favor of the Kingstonian. I wouldn't care if it has half of it as subsidized housing and half of it in 21st century green. I don't care how it meets its standards, but we really need middle-class housing, particularly for older people. There are no good apartments available to anyone in the middle class. I think the apartments that REPCO, I would love to have an apartment at the almshouse, but I have too much money. I'm not going to be eligible. I'm not opposed to any of those developments. What I feel bad about is there's no housing for a senior with parking, with an elevator, and within walking distance of a few things. And since a good deal of the population of Kingston is over 55, I think it's something that is sorely needed and will sell out immediately. So I spoke a couple of weeks ago at the planning board. I don't know what it was, but I have to say a number of people stopped and thanked me for speaking up in favor of the Kingstonian, and they were all seniors, I must say. Two people were opposed to it, but they were opposed to it on every ground whatsoever. It had no reality about what could make it a saleable project. They just didn't want it. But I'm in favor of it. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Okay, we're going to close the open public speaking. Moving on to old business. It's item number 2 and item number 3. It's going to be number 9-17 and 21 North Front Street and 51 Schwenk Drive and a portion of Fair Street Extension. The first part is a lot line deletion of the lands of Herzog Supply Company and the City of Kingston. Section, block, and lot is 48.80-1-25, 26, and 24.120. Seeker determination, zone C2. The second portion is a site plan special permit to construct a mixed-use building with a 420-car garage, 129 apartments, 32 hotel rooms, and 800 square feet of retail space. That is the same section, blocks, and lot. Seeker determination, zone C2, mixed-use overlay district. Kingstonian Development LLC is the applicant. Herzog Supply Company Incorporated and City of Kingston are the owners. Before we go any further, the applicants are going to provide us with a presentation. So I'm going to hand it over to Joe Benora. He can introduce his team and go from there.
Thank you very much. We're here tonight to present a PowerPoint presentation largely aimed at the...
So, do you want to give him that thing, this one?
I think this is working, right?
It works.
Yeah. Largely aimed at the architectural aspects of the project. This is a very similar presentation to what we did last week, but I know the planning board wasn't there. It was the Historic Landmark Preservation Committee. Although we are available and will be answering questions about any of the seeker studies and any aspect of the project. As far as development team goes, we have Mike here, who is our attorney, Mike Moriello. We have Dennis Larios, who's our project engineer. Steve McKenzie, who's here from Burlington, Vermont, is our project architect. Patrick Page, Brad Jordan, and myself, representing the owners and principals of the project. We have a very local team, with the exception of Steve, who you should all know. We are a Hudson Valley-based family organization of three different families. The Page family's been in the Hudson Valley nearly 100 years. The Herzog family, now known as the Jordans, operate the Herzog Supply Company, as well as the Kingston Plaza. And my family operates everything from restaurants and catering facilities to multifamily housing and commercial properties, hotel and parking garage. We've worked with a number of different groups. We're going on 3 years that we've been working on this project. So we started in February of 2017. So this is not a list of endorsements. This is a list of groups that we've been collaborating with on all aspects of the project. And it's a complicated project, which I'm going to remind you of some of our constraints, and then we'll look again at the architecture. So some of the project goals. The number one project goal was to construct new parking infrastructure at zero cost to the taxpayers. So if you recall, there were three different RFPs that were put out, and our project answered the latest round of RFP to build a parking structure on what is now a surface parking lot down in the bottom, I call it the hole, where North Front Street and Fair Street Extension intersect. So we looked at this project from a holistic point of view. You can't just build a parking structure. What else makes sense to be built with it that'll support the project to work economically? So I'm going to speak about the economics for a minute or two here, even though it's not necessarily a planning board thing, but I know that it's important for the public to hear some of this. And at some of the meetings we've been having, I don't think that opportunity has been given. So we decided to expand the project to not just include the piece that was put in the RFP, but also the existing Herzog warehouse. And we needed to do that in order to make this thing work economically. Parking structures are very expensive to build. They cost roughly $35,000 per parking space. When you multiply that out over the size of the project, it's over a $15 million investment. Now, $15 million in and of itself was a lot of money, but it's not a lot of money if it's going to make money. The problem is the parking garage will lose money from the day that it's built until the day that it someday doesn't exist anymore 100 years down the road. If you just did a very simple calculation and you pull out a mortgage calculator and you put in a 25-year amortization with $35,000 payment at 5% interest, you're somewhere around $200 per parking space per month just to build it. That has nothing to do with the operation and maintenance and cleaning and elevators and lights and sprinkler system and a guy to collect the money and dealing with the tickets and all that. That's just to build it. And our parking rate is going to be $60 a month. So that means every spot is going to lose money from the day that it's built on. So that has to be subsidized in some way. And one way we figured to do that was to build housing on top of it, and a hotel, and some commercial space, and grant money, and ultimately someday a pilot agreement, which we'll get into with a different organization. All of those funding streams combined subsidize the loss, not just the construction costs, but the operating loss every single month on that parking structure. And that's why parking structures fail. South of White Plains, people charge $20, $30, $40, $50, $60 a day for parking. Those parking structures are in great shape. They're profit centers for cities and private individuals. If you wonder why the other parking garage failed, it failed because of lack of maintenance. It's difficult to maintain something. It's difficult to want to maintain something that loses money all the time with no other source of income. So we came up with a project that solves that very important equation. And it's one of the reasons people talk about affordable housing. And I'm going to get into it just for a minute here. And again, I know it's not a planning board issue, but I think it's important to address. We think affordable housing is very important to the city of Kingston. I know the city of Kingston has been supportive of affordable housing and affordable housing projects. We are supportive of affordable housing and affordable housing projects. However, there is no, I should say, for affordable housing to work, there has to be a subsidy, much like a parking garage needed subsidy. Affordable housing units need a subsidy from some grant program. There are no grant programs that exist that will subsidize the housing and still leave money left over to pay for a parking structure. If there was no parking structure, this would be a completely different project. Meeting an affordable housing requirement would be a breeze. Not needing a pilot, no problem. Not needing the grant money, no problem. But because we're trying to build this parking structure and maintain it for the life of the project with no cost to the city and no cost to its taxpayers, affordable housing simply can't work in this project. That doesn't mean that we as owners wouldn't support other housing initiatives that the city of Kingston is currently working on. We've had several meetings with various people, various organizations, about affordable housing in Kingston, and we're all for it. We want to support it. It just doesn't make sense in this paradigm trying to pay for that parking. So that's important to note. Environmentally friendly. So the letter that was referred to that Steve wrote, the problem is where we are in the project right now, we have a concept plan done, and it's very difficult to commit to a number of items when we don't have an approved concept plan. In order to take the plan from a concept, which is a pretty well-fleshed-out concept, but a concept to reality is 6 or 7 months of engineering and architecture work and another $1 million-plus dollars in engineering and architecture. At that point, we'll know exactly what we're going to do. I could tell you from our track record, the water club building that Patrick and I built down in Poughkeepsie 3 years ago, that building doesn't have a single light bulb that isn't LED. Every unit in that building is powered, heated and cooled by a very energy efficient heat pump. We use green building practices in all the materials that we choose. we shop and source locally. We are committed to the environment, but to say at this point in time exactly what we're going to do when we don't have an approved concept isn't wise. No business person should commit to something so early on that you don't know if you can live up to that promise. I can tell you from our past experiences, we are environmentally friendly. Promoting walkability and connectivity. So this project, one of its main goals was connecting uptown with the bottom of the hill, the plaza and everything else, and promoting walkability within uptown. And you'll see a slide of the proposed pedestrian plaza and ADA accessible walkway across Swank Drive, providing density near a major transportation hub. That's very important. We have trailways right down the road, and adding density will help end the cycle of boom and bust that many uptown businesses have faced for decades by providing consumers. So we're not just providing parking infrastructure for them to help do a better job running their businesses or have a better capacity to run their business. We're providing consumers to those same business owners to shop in their stores. And promoting retention. And one of the speakers tonight talked about residents who want to age in place. This is an elevator-friendly building. There's an elevator that goes to each floor. Each unit is one level. And our primary market for this are local residents, Kingston and the surrounding towns, that want to stay here but don't have an option to right now because that property doesn't exist. That's what our project is in Poughkeepsie. 80% of our property, of our residents in our project in Poughkeepsie are empty nesters. The other 20% are young professionals. So we're pretty much looking at people before they have kids and after they're done with kids, people looking to downsize, don't want to deal with maintenance, et cetera. That's what this is targeted towards. Okay, moving on. At this point, I'm going to introduce Steve McKenzie. He's going to talk a little bit about the project architecture. We're going to try to move through it a little quicker than we did last week and then allow time for lots of questions, not just regarding the architecture, but anything relating to the project.
Do you have an extra microphone?
How's that? Sounds good. So really the touchstone for our approach architecturally starts with the historic guidelines. This is actually out of the Secretary of the Interior standards for rehabilitation. And it's important to note that this project is not really a restoration. It's new construction, but in a setting that obviously has a very historic context. So the purpose of this is to highlight how they defined the agenda for a project like this, which is being sympathetic to the context and specifically think about the size, scale, color, material and character of the property, neighborhood, or environment. The background on the slide, by the way, is the original Kingstonian. I don't know if any of you were here when that was the case, but the landmark committee from last week said it would actually find some relevant materials for us to replicate the Kingstonian when we do the project, going back to 1850, apparently. So I'm quite interested to see those documents, what it looked like. This sort of underscores our philosophy and how we approach a project like this. Elio Saarinen's father, Errol Saarinen, who did the TWA terminal in New York, a very famous architect, but it's really a classic principle from a mindset standpoint and a process standpoint for how to approach any design problem. So what it's really saying is the context is really a key driver for something like this. I'm also the kind of person who enjoys constraints. One reason we're here tonight is to learn about any other constraints that you may have. I think constraints are healthy. There's another saying where the toughest design problem is a blank sheet of paper with no constraints. Where do you start? So personally, I like them. What I don't like is discovering constraints late in the process because that's really quite disruptive for everybody. So, and again, it's not too late to hear whatever is on your mind, whatever you may think is an appropriate constraint. That's actually, and again, that's an aerial site of the site. It's a very interesting site in that one site is obviously part of the Stockade District, very historic. The other site is quite the opposite, not only in terms of personality, but in terms of scale. And that's one of our big challenges for approaching this, which is how do you finesse two very different circumstances from a design standpoint. I noticed a lot of parallels to my personal experience. I happen to live in two very historic settings, one in Burlington, that's an 1869 vintage building. Have my office downstairs, and I live upstairs. And I also have a place in Italy, and in reading some of the historic materials, I noticed a lot of parallels to life in a small hill town in Italy, which is triggered initially by reading the document that talks about Kingston being the only city in New York that still has the four original streets that define the Stockade District, the only city in New York, which is pretty amazing. When you think of a typical Italian hill town, you have the presence of the original wall around the perimeter, and I made the comment last week about the way they make no concessions to the automobile. You've got a similar circumstance here in terms of what we think this project will do for Kingston, which is parking on the edge, and then people walk to whatever their destination is within the city. Probably do more walking in Italy. It's a hillier circumstance in general, but very good parallel. The second parallel for me is by virtue of the walkability, we now have one car. I downsized from a house 6 years ago. Wasn't sure how my wife was going to respond, but she loves it. So we're in a circumstance where we can walk to everything. It'll be the same with the Kingstonian, and that's one of the keys behind the pedestrian bridge, is having that ability to walk to a grocery store, drugstore, restaurant, whatever it is the circumstance requires, you'll have that capability here. It's the same in living in a small hill town in Italy in that respect. This shows then, first of all, the visual impact looking down Wall Street. We took to heart some of the comments we heard earlier from the Historic Land Preservation Committee about changing the material on the exterior and doing a few other items which we picked up. So this shows the impact where the building is adjacent to Uncle Willie's. Thanks for the pointer. You can point better than I can. Showing before and after, this is using our 3D computer model of the project, and we have a version of it on Joe's computer to fly around if you want to get the experience firsthand of seeing how that works. At the end of Wall Street is an entry to the parking structure. That's entry only, and it's purposely designed as a strong visual cue so that somebody in a car can readily find their destination. I think that's really important for somebody driving around. There's also going to be a pedestrian access. Need your pointer again, Joe. And you can see how that's identified separately from the vehicular access. We have then fenestration along the street level. This is looking down North Front Street that mimics the scale of typical storefronts downtown Kingston along Wall Street in particular, smaller openings on the upper floors. This shows beyond where we're replicating then the original Kingstonian. And the scale of this shifts from a three-story building line of sight looking down Wall Street to a four-story, so that the volume flanking the pedestrian plaza, which is the next slide, Joe, the volume is sympathetic to the original hotel on the other side of the pedestrian plaza. So this is a view looking down the Fair Street access, showing how we've converted that to a public amenity. Another element relating back to hill towns in Italy is the presence of public spaces. And my sense is that from what I've seen around the Stockade District, there isn't what I would consider a very strong public gathering place, whether it's a formal event or whether it's a casual kind of interaction. So we see this being a nice focal point, if you will, creating a sense of place for the community. This is a view looking down North Front from the other direction, showing, again, the restoration on the Kingstonian, the housing with commercial on the ground floor beyond. I mentioned this last week, we don't have a lot of good information on the hotel, but we're trying to collect what we can to be as true to the original aesthetic as we can. So we'll see what we get from some of the folks around the committee last week. Next slide, Joe. So this summarizes design evolution, really, to say that we are listening. We do welcome input. The first image on the upper left is the first image we showed to everybody. We received some initial feedback, modified it a bit, image on the right. But really the big step is the current version where we changed some of the exterior materials for the portions of the project that are truly on the edge of the historic district using brick, using, in this case, a stronger cornice expression like you see in many buildings along Wall Street, other parts of the Stockade District. And this is actually meant to reference the Stuyvesant Hotel. There's a number of things.
One point I want to just point out quick, Steve, sorry, is that this is actually an older version, a slightly older version. What you saw a few slides ago, we received feedback that it should be more of a square. So that is actually what the current version is, despite the slide comment here.
Anybody pick up on that? When they looked at those, probably not, but it's a key point.
Okay, thanks.
The other element I did mention, but there's a couple of bay windows on the North Front Street side that reference another building in Wall Street. So where appropriate, we're referencing, but there's a difference between referencing and what I consider theme park architecture, which is in sort of an inauthentic way trying to simulate something that's historic. So we have to be careful about that approach. This shows how we modified the pedestrian plaza to open up the views towards the mountains and beyond. So where you have a skylight, I need your pointer again, Joe, that's providing daylight down to the terminus, the visual terminus, where you arrive in the parking structure off of the lower part of Fair Street at the intersection with Schwenk. This is another comment we picked up again from the committee where we changed the aesthetic, eliminating a balcony expression and changing that to a punched opening within a brick facade. Still have a balcony, but it's not readily perceived as the same. Mentioned this earlier, again, referencing the Stuyvesant for a corner entry. We also had a corner entry because that's what's in the current, I should say, the original Kingstonian. So that's, again, providing some appropriate symmetry on that part of the pedestrian plaza. I already mentioned the bay windows on Wall Street, metal panel for the cladding on that. Montgomery Ward, we have a similar scale, even though the Ward building was two stories, they're very tall stories, so in terms of actual cornice height, very similar for the portion of the building that abuts Uncle Willie's. Wanted to show you this because I'm not sure that many people recall what was there back in the 60s on the backside of Montgomery Ward, but this, in fact, is equivalent to a seven-story building and obviously a monolithic brick volume. So that's what was there before in terms of, let's say, sensitivity to the historic district. Obviously, it's not very sensitive, and but worth, I think, keeping in mind for what we're dealing with here. Not sure how many of you saw the plans for the project, so wanted to quickly walk you through the concept. This shows what we call level 4, which is really at North Front Street elevation. That's our benchmark elevation for where we set the floor levels for everything on that side of the pedestrian plaza. So from that reference elevation, keeping that accessible on both sides of the Fair Street Plaza, we go down whatever number of levels are required to make the parking work, same for housing, on both sides of the street. So again, North Front Street is on the high side of the site here. I think Joe mentioned earlier that whatever is currently here on the site, we're not disturbing that. That's going to remain. So we're sensitive to the impact they may have on the Senate House and other existing buildings within the neighborhood. So we're really adding to that. This may actually be a void for this part of the site. We know that the soil is essentially toothpaste, so our plan, in fact, we've looked at the layout of the structural part of the parking garage, will have very large spread footings, not unlike what the original parking structure had, so that we can minimize the expensive foundations for the project. And you can do that. We've had the engineers study that and properly support the two levels of parking above and the four levels of housing and commercial on top of that. The other consideration I should mention, if you look at Schwenk on the left, is that we stepped the building back, being sensitive to the scale that you see along Schwenk. So the idea is to have three-story or four-story buildings in terms of what's perceived, rather than a seven-story high building like you saw on the backside of Montgomery Ward. We had that option if we wanted to, but we felt this is a more sensitive approach for how you handle the volume of the project. So the setback from that three-story building, which code-wise, by the way, is a separate building from a fire safety standpoint, the setback there is about 35 feet, which is substantial.
And I'm going to just jump in here. The importance of this building, one of the main important features of this building, is to hide the parking structure. So when you're building a 420-car parking structure, you don't want to see the parking structure. And if this three-story, I call it a liner building, an urban liner, which is a term that has been used around the country, that people are going back in and adding liners of something that's productive to hide something in, that's maybe productive but not sightly behind it. So the purpose of this is to hide the cars and the parking behind it. This is actually like slicing a knife through it, so that when you see the renderings from Schwenk Drive, you'll notice that there are apartments here and a half a story here buried in the ground. That's to hide the parking behind it.
So the blue in the center shows the pool in the center of the amenity plaza. And again, that's a cross-section cut through really the middle part of the entire development. Sorry about that,
Joe. That's all good.
So this swings around to the northeast side, looking from the Kingston Plaza across Schwenk.
Not quite. Kingston Plaza is probably over here a little bit, but kind of.
On your right, yep. So this shows, again, where we have really a four-story building that's on top of parking. That's true on both sides of the street. One of the things that we're considering doing then for the base of the building is using landscaping rather than seeing a seven-story building again. So the base that you see below the four stories of housing is river birch, which is a nice, relatively quick-growing but low-maintenance type of screening for the base of the parking structure. The other thing that Dennis keeps reminding me is that we located the service entry for all the uses on the site over to the left there, so that trash, deliveries, whatever, for the commercial and the housing parts are discreetly kept on the perimeter to minimize the visibility of that kind of activity. So,
and to minimize the traffic impact up on North Front Street as well.
Right.
And then this is the main entry to and from the parking structure, which I think you'll see a little bit better on the next pictures.
So this shows, as you approach the site towards Kingston Plaza, you can see the pedestrian bridge in the distance, one of the entries to the parking structure on the east side of the street. So this shows a view up Fair. So all the parking access, public parking, would occur the lower part of Fair Street. So if you drive up that, let's say, two-thirds of the current distance, you'll be entering at the top level of the parking, and you have the option of making a left turn or a right turn to access the public parking. There's internal circulation in the main component, but that's the intent to handle all the parking access, or I should say the majority for the parking. Right. So that creates the opportunity for the pedestrian plaza up top. And you can see the railing at the edge of the plaza there in the center. The aesthetic we are trying to use is to make this look like a cluster of smaller buildings. And I've said before that color is a very powerful tool, but part of this is driven by what you see on Wall Street, where you have a lot of smaller scaled storefronts, and you have a lot of color, frankly, in terms of the aesthetic on Wall Street. So the scale of this mimics a typical individual building on Wall Street in terms of the cornice and in terms of how the recessed balconies articulate smaller volumes. That's part of what's driving the approach for the design on this side of it. We recognize that this is a challenge, and how do you finesse going from, a three, four-story side on North Front to a much taller circumstance on Schwenk side. That's one of the obviously big challenges. So by stepping the building back, this is where you see that step from a three-story building over parking to three stories set back. The setback, again, is 35 feet. So that's one way to finesse the challenge in terms of scale. We're using different color combinations to articulate, as I said, individual buildings. And the balconies and the cornice line reinforce that kind of perception. We talked with the historic group about maybe some different articulation for the corners, so we're going to look at that. We're still fine-tuning the color palette, but in very simple terms, we felt it's appropriate to have an aesthetic that looks like a cluster of individual buildings, being sensitive to the context. The sizes of the openings are very similar to what you see in all the buildings on this part of the Stockade District, so we felt that's appropriate as well. The materials, whether it's clapboard siding or vertical board and batten, you see a fair amount of that Stockade District. We recognize if we could afford it that it'd be preferable to use brick, but because of the poor soils and other considerations, it's just not in the cards at this point, unless we go to really expensive deep pile foundations, and that, frankly, would make the project unaffordable.
One other thing I want to point out is that this setback allows us to have a roof terrace condition where we anticipate doing some green roof treatment. There would be some balconies for apartments, but there's a larger area than what an individual apartment would have, and it gives us the opportunity to handle some stormwater and some green building technology on this rooftop.
We're very sensitive to sustainability. I think people don't talk enough about sustainable lifestyles. I think if anything that has a bigger impact environmentally, an example of that was an article in the New York Times last week about if everybody cut the amount of driving they did by 10%, the impact of that would be huge. Nobody talks about sustainable lifestyle enough. It's easy to focus on the built environment itself, and that is a huge part of the, let's say, the agenda. But to me, lifestyle is a far bigger issue in terms of sustainability. We've noticed a difference. I mentioned earlier, my wife was surprised when we downsized to a 700-square-foot apartment, which will be similar to some of the units here. And as I said, we have one car. But everything's now a walkable circumstance. I'm still working on the spare tire. I got to walk more. But it's better for us from a health standpoint. She loves it from a, let's say, mental health standpoint. We're close to a bike path on the waterfront. Everything is walkable. So to me, that's one of the key benefits of this project, is creating that opportunity for people who choose to live here. And that's one of the benefits of the pedestrian bridge, et cetera,
right.
What I think this can do really for sustainable lifestyles. And
right,
for
so
the
this
town.
Is showing the pedestrian bridge, and it's important to note there is no ADA accessible route right now from uptown down to the plaza. The existing Fair Street extension is too steep, and what this would allow is to have an elevator on this side, and then you'd go across the bridge, and then there's a ramp to get up to level 4. The other route is to enter the building on the ground floor and then take an elevator up and exit at level 4. So there's two ADA accessible routes that, depending on which side of the street you're on, would be more convenient. So I'm just going to hop in on this one, Steve, if you don't mind.
Sure.
So this amenity deck here would be available to residents and to hotel guests. So this is the only part of the project that we've looked at so far, other than the inside of an apartment itself, that's private to people that live here or visit this building. And this is walled in on three sides, and then on the fourth side, it's taller than the neighbors, but it is still allowing southern exposure. So this was specifically crafted for this building to allow the amenities that our residents desire, which is a pool, a space to gather with your neighbors, outdoor grilling, because with fire code, you can't grill on these balconies, but you can grill on top of a concrete structure, and a community gathering place for the community that lives within this building. The pedestrian plaza is open to the public, and that will act as a public park. We will maintain it. We will operate it for the life of the project. So the pedestrian plaza is open, just like park hours, will be open all the time. This area, however, will only be open to residents and hotel guests. Oh, and Steve, I didn't point out your exterior room comments. So do you want to do that real quick?
Yeah, very briefly. In the same way that room-shaped buildings, I think the way buildings create exterior rooms is important, too. It's another Italian parallel, but that's something we felt was really important, too. So this is a public exterior room, if you will, with a nice vista towards the mountains, and of course the other shows what's available for residents or those that choose to join.
Hey, that is the brief version of what we did a week ago related to historic architecture and the architecture of the project. We are ready to take questions about anything our team is regarding any of the any aspect of the project. The only problem with sitting is, well, if I finagle this over there, if you want to see something, I'm going to have to
Okay.
jump up. So I don't mind standing. I'm good with standing. Steve might want to sit down, though. As Steve mentioned, we have a program here that may be relevant. This program, if you want to look at any particular place on the building, I can fly around and show you the view from that location.
Can you go into the pedestrian plaza?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going underground. Hang on. So as Steve pointed out before, this feature here, this it's basically a skylight that's allowing light down into the parking structure where the pickup and drop-off are. But in terms of the idea of the pedestrian plaza, retail space, cafe-type restaurant, et cetera, would spill out onto the plaza, but it's completely open to the public. So there's no cordoned-off space for anyone. And then if you get over to the edge, although we don't have the mountains in the background exactly per se, you can see that there's a railing that would allow the view. And we could spin around and look what it might look like.
So the general public, as they're going through the pedestrian plaza, getting down to the...
parking?
Yeah.
Sure. So what I'm going to do is pull up a floor plan now. It's going to be a little easier to see on the floor plan.
Okay.
Right here. So the general public would enter in this direction... would have, there would be a door here. So there would be there's an elevator and a door to get into the staircase. So that's the public. And then the housing entry would be separate with its own separate elevator. It's important to keep security in mind. So a resident would only want to live in this building if they know they're going to be secure. So not mixing the parking directly to the corridor where you live is important, and we've thought that through. But direct entry right here. And similarly, if we zoom out, and you went down, this is the stair, and there's an elevator as well that would go all the way down to Schwenk Drive. So you'd be able to come out here. This is the ramp that would be the pedestrian plaza. I'm sorry, the ramp that would go down to the pedestrian bridge, and there's a pedestrian bridge going across. So this is ramping up at an ADA accessible grade. This is level, and then up here is level. Yes, there's only commercial space on the ground. We felt, it's appropriate, you know, most of uptown is commercial space on the ground floor. It wouldn't make sense to have residential space on the ground floor that opened out to the pedestrian plaza or opened out to North Front Street. So it's calling out retail. It doesn't necessarily have to be retail. It could be an office. It could be a bank. It could be a restaurant. We don't have the tenants exactly lined up, although we do have some people interested. The hotel lobby is located on the corner here, and this will service as the lobby and reception area for both the hotel and the residences. We do see this as a great spot for a cafe that would serve the hotel, the people that lived in the building, and the general public, so it can become a viable use. Small cafe, similar to the diner, honestly, in terms of what it would serve. So the diner that was located on the property for many years would be able to operate a similar business right here. One thing we didn't talk about, which I think would be important, is parking, number of parking spaces, and I know that question may come up. So I think, let me just take a second to address that. So we're building 420 parking spaces on this as part of this project. 130 of those parking spaces would be numbered and dedicated, one per apartment. And the question is, well, so that leaves 290 open and available to the public for either hourly, daily, or monthly rental. The question is, what happens if someone has two cars? So to address that, we have a couple ideas. Number one, not just what happens to if they have two cars, but what about the employees that work in this building? And what about someone who may not be able to afford to pay? So Brad and his family own the plaza directly across the street. We're going to dedicate, to start with, 40 parking spaces in that plaza for employees who work in this building to park there so that they're not taking up the newly built parking. How can we enforce that? It's pretty easy. They can park there for free. They're going to pay $1.50 an hour to park here. So it's not necessarily enforcement. It's incentivizing. It's pretty good incentive. Do you want to spend $1.50 of the money you're making, or do you want to park just a little bit further away and take an ADA accessible safe bridge across the road or walk across the street and come up the elevator? So that's employees. Same thing with valet for the hotel. And then as far as the residents, if a resident doesn't downsize their cars when they downsize their house, they could rent a spot in the garage, but that spot would probably be used at night. During the day, which is when most of uptown needs parking, it's presumed that a number of those residents are going to go out and do things. And when they go out and do something, they leave their space and someone else can park in it. That space is not dedicated to them for their second space, if they get a second space. It's not at all dedicated. It is available for the next person to park in. And if they come home and there's no space there, then they go park in the plaza.
So you're saying the valet parking for the hotel is going to be down in the plaza?
It's planned to be down in the plaza. Okay. Again, some of this is to be worked out based on plan A and plan B. Plan A, hey, if the evening hours, the parking garage is mostly empty, well, the valet will use the empty spots in the garage in the evening. If it turns out that the parking lot becomes full all the time, well, that's a great problem to have. And that means we have a lot more people staying in uptown at night. Well, then we have the backup plan to use the plaza where there's ample parking now. And Brad's family, quite frankly, hasn't done any policing of that plaza ever. There's a lot of extra parking down there right now. So I know that was going to be a question. I figured I'd just answer it now. If that does answer it, if there's more questions, I'd love to go through it. But then go ahead with anything else.
Just in relation to parking, when you were showing the visuals on Schwenk Drive, looking at where you enter into the parking garage, the old Fair Street extension, is there anything that kind of designates for people in the intersection whether they're entering a private, in essence, residence versus just going up a city street?
That's a good question. So there's an opportunity for signage and wayfinding here to label
this as... That just looks like a street right now.
It does. So it does. In this rendering, it looks like a street. I think there would be some signage that would be a good idea, and that's a great comment, to talk about wayfinding of public parking lot or parking garage. It should be noted that you're entering a parking garage. Now, the way we've designed the floor plan, if they did enter by accident, they can easily turn around and come back out. So you don't have to enter the garage and then deal with a ticket and then worry about...
So there's like a cul-de-sac on the
top. There's a turnaround at the top, correct. I'd have to pull that up, but yes, there is a... There is a plan of that, yeah. Let me... Oops, I'm opening AutoCAD. You don't want that open. Well, Dennis wants it open, but my computer's not going to be happy with the amount of memory it's going to grab. But hold on 1 second. Planning board, plans, floor plans. So if we go to level 4, this articulates it. There's the ability to turn around and go back out. This space is open. So you could say, oh, I made a mistake, back up and go out. So there's one way in and two ways out of the main garage. And you could see the entry to the garage. There's an entry. This is a ramp down off of North Front Street, directly opposite wall. One way down, pedestrian access up, and then entry and exit here, and entry and exit on this side as well, if that makes sense. Okay.
I had a question about when you showed the sections, and Steve, maybe this is more appropriately directed to you. They were shown on the parking garage site, and I'm concerned with the demolition of the Herzog warehouse building and the sensitivity to the adjoining properties and the Senate House across the street. Maybe you can speak a little to that, or...
I have two. So I mentioned earlier that it's not evident looking at the section, but the edge of the parking structure on the lower levels is going to be set back far enough away to avoid those kinds of issues.
Right.
So there actually will be a void. It's not articulated on the section, but if you look at the bottom level, for instance, see how that's much farther to the left? That's one reason why it's shown that way, is out of sensitivity to some of the challenging foundation situations. So we're still fine-tuning that, but we're obviously sensitive to those concerns.
Right, but my question is actually the opposite side, the existing Herzog's warehouse is.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I can address it, Sue. The demolition of that building is actually not that difficult at all. So using the right equipment, we can reach up and pull down sections of the building directly on top of itself without affecting anything else. The building is not anchored to the ground in a way that's going to require a lot of shaking, hammering, et cetera. We don't, of course, there will be a survey done of the foundations that our neighbors are, because to protect ourselves as well as them, we want before and after photographs to show that we didn't cause any damage that may already exist on those foundations. So, but taking down that three-story structure is not going to be a challenge at all. The right equipment exists to just pulverize it as it comes down.
And I mean, I know you talked about this at the Landmarks Preservation Commission meeting. Maybe you could elaborate on the archaeological.
Sure. So Joe Diamond, who's our archaeological consultant, came to the Landmarks Preservation Committee meeting. He performed a Phase 1A study. He looked at lots of maps and lots of historical records, which have been submitted as part of SEACR. It was determined that there may be some areas that warrant further investigation during construction demolition. So the way that would be handled is when we're working in the areas that he's identified that may contain artifacts, he'll be on site while we're digging to make sure that if we come across anything that's worthy of preservation, it's preserved at that time. Currently, it's buried underneath blacktop and concrete, old foundations, etc. So there's no route to get at that at this moment without destroying the parking lot and heavy excavation. When we're on site doing the excavation, however, it'll be an opportunity to try to locate those artifacts.
And where are those spots on the?
Basically, right here at the bottom of the hill. There's the possibility that, well, there was a moat that went around the stockade district, and again, Joe knows more about this than me, but I listened to him last week, so I got educated, and it's in the report. There was a moat, and moats contain lots of valuable stuff, as he put it. So if the moat was here and not here, then when we're digging in this area, we will find it, or we may find it. There's no guarantee that we're going to find anything. But that's the area that he was most interested in, right at the base of the hill.
And this question is for Steve. If we can go to the visual from the plaza side.
Sure. One moment.
You said you were mimicking the cluster of smaller buildings, and you also said that you're still fine-tuning the color patterns and cornices with the HLPC, Landmarks Commission.
Uh-huh.
Can you describe what their concerns were regarding the colors?
You know, I can't say that they expressed any specific concerns about the colors. You know, I think it's the same sensitive. Again, it's a big project. It's a big scale. I think they were honest about, let's say, what is the historic domain versus something outside that. You know, and as I mentioned at the beginning, that's one of the challenges, is how do you finesse that, recognizing all the other project constraints that we're faced with, which is balancing as best we can budget, building code, accessibility, along with aesthetics. So they did mention, if we could, doing a few more things with the cornice detail, which I referenced earlier. I think Mark was the one who mentioned that. But as far as color specifically, they didn't have any comments. I can tell you some of the things they're looking at would probably strengthen the perception of a lower building versus the upper building. You know, it's, I think, in the attempt to make it look like a cluster, it probably makes it more difficult to perceive that. So we're looking at ways we can articulate that more clearly, recognizing that it's a different circumstance and that it's probably okay if it looks like a larger singular structure. So those are some of the things that we're considering.
Okay, thank you.
And Wayne, we welcome comments on the colors. in particular, we're willing to change, and we're willing to listen to comments. We have been all along. We've made a number of changes. If a group, and you're the planning board, if you feel strongly about one version that we present versus another, and I think we can, in the next week or so, now that we've received all of the public comments from the seeker process, come up with what Steve's talking about as an articulation of the upper versus lower, and you love it, great. If you don't, you'd rather go back to this, great. If you want to see these instead of blue and tan and white, all horizontal, board and batten, go on, we're open to changing that. You know, as Steve mentioned, one of the struggles is what is the architecture we're trying to blend in with on Schoenig Drive? You have a plaza, you have a couple brick buildings, you have a couple brown buildings, you have the backside of the buildings that are on the Stockade District, which are covered in some of the asbestos siding. What are we trying to do other than make something that we're proud of and hide a parking structure?
I would ask Dennis maybe if you could speak to some of the stormwater and how that's going to be handled.
Yeah, thank you. We submitted a report called preliminary report for water. I'm sorry, we did a water supply and sewer disposal, and we did a stormwater report. We looked at the current site, both the characteristics of the current stormwater runoff from a volume and a water quality point of view, and then we did an assessment of a post-development stormwater runoff. All the site currently drains, both Fair Street, that block of Fair Street, I should say, the Herzog's properties, which include the Uptown Grill and the warehouse, and, of course, the city parking garage property, all drain into the Schwenk Drive drainage system and are piped to the Esopus Creek at a low point of Schwenk Drive down near the Rondell Savings Bank branch office. The plan and the report indicates two things. We can reduce the rate of runoff marginally from the site by, putting porous pavers treatment in the pedestrian plaza with a filter under it. So we're collecting that. We're slowing the rate of runoff in that area, which currently is a steep city street, and is going to be flat back a good half the way now. And we can collect that through a porous system and a filter system. And we're also going to take all the new runoff, all the runoff from the buildings and the site. As you know, 90% of this site is building and the pedestrian plaza. And we're going to collect it and treat it with a first flush stormwater treatment both on the east and west part of the plaza. So, and that's in our study. So we're going to improve the stormwater quality that's running off the site significantly in accordance with the redevelopment standards of the state of New York, DEC Design Manual 2015. We're required to do this to some extent, but we have to meet thresholds for redevelopment, which means addressing stormwater quality and not increasing rates of runoff from the site. So we're reducing rates of runoff from the site, and we're adding water quality treatments. And when we get into this, the SWIP, which is a design document that goes with the building permit, so to speak, we're going to also capture, once the building is designed in more detail, some other water quality benefits on the plaza, on the events deck, where there's a lot of greenery that we didn't take credit for in the report, rain gardens, those kind of things that we can also further reduce or further improve water quality running off the site and further reduce rates of runoff from the site. And that report was submitted both to the lead agency, but also I submitted it directly to the city engineer. And it included detailed runoff hydrographs for the pre- and post-development condition, or the current condition and the post-development condition under various stormwater events, and how we're going to address the water quality, volume, and treatment of the stormwater from the site.
Is that an updated report from what you've already submitted, or
no? It's all in the July.
The current one. Okay. Just so I'm clear.
All right.
It's a stick report that is on your city website and was submitted electronically.
Okay.
And I haven't received any...
I just wanted to clarify that.
Any detailed comments yet from the city engineer, but I expect that you will and I will. And the public works superintendent.
You said there was going to be some rooftop terraces also. Is that what you were saying?
I was talking to the rain gardens on the event deck, which is the pool level over the garage. I did not take credit for that yet in the report, but I think there's some opportunity to do some water quality features there as well on that deck, because there's a lot of landscaping proposed on that deck. So.
For instance, the pool catches water too.
Right. So.
I might not have heard it correctly.
Yes, on the Schwenk side, there's an opportunity here to do some green roof. It all depends on the ultimate design of the building approval, and there's a balancing act between designing every detail out, and I think what Dennis is providing is that in the worst-case scenario, given that report and taking no credit for any green roof technologies, we exceed the water quality standards of New York State. Once we get to do the final building design, we're going to exceed it further.
So we're reducing, actually the project slightly reduces the site's 99% impermeable at the present time. It's pavement and there's a little bit of grass, but it's pavement, parking lot, building. So we are creating a dog park. We are creating impermeable or some permeable surfaces within the pedestrian plaza, and we also are creating some landscaped areas that don't currently exist. So we are able to reduce the peak flow rates, total volume runoff from the site, peak flow rates off the site, and also address water quality in accordance with the standards. And that's, I think, demonstrated in the report. But, again, we'll wait for the city engineer's review and sign off as well.
And I will note for the record that the report was submitted to Judy Hansen, and she did sign off that the city has the capacity.
Yeah, there was a separate report on water supply and wastewater that was submitted as well as part of the process. And I did pretty much get a good positive feedback from both the city engineer and the water superintendent with respect to capacity and the general approach.
Getting back to visuals, I know you've taken different vantage points throughout the stockade area and the surrounding areas. What vantage point did you use, like the furthest distance you've traveled to show how this project would appear?
I think the furthest vantage point we have in this presentation currently is the one down Wall Street. Let me go back up and take a look here. I think it's this one. I know in our visual impact study, which should be able to pull up, we had one from Skytop.
Yeah. There's actually an aerial shot, Joe. It was in the visual impact study.
Okay. Let me see if I can find that. I wasn't
and
prepared.
And one further down Wall Street. And I think Fair Street as well.
Here we go. We will find it. Okay, so that is the same one we just looked at.
Mm-hmm.
This is further down. Oh, no, this is looking the other way. I'm sorry. So looking down North Front Street, this is further down Wall Street. That's the one that I think we were just referring to. And then we have this is Fair Street. This is the up-close one. I'm trying to find the aerial from...
It's at the end.
It's at the end? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just going to skip right to the end.
And then that's existing and that's...
Just had it. Yeah, there it is.
Got it. Okay.
That's from Skytop?
Yeah. I knew I had it.
Yeah.
That's from the Skytop restaurant or the former Skytop restaurant. Now, has a different name.
Can you see it?
That's without the building. That's with the building.
Okay.
That's Benedictine Hospital in the far upper left.
Oh, up here, yeah. County building.
Yeah, the visual on Wall Street looking straight on. The visual on Wall Street looking straight on.
Sure.
What are we looking at on the third floor?
Let me get back there, sorry.
What appears to be on the roof? What's the gray?
So the gray are apartments. The idea was to step them back and keep them to the side so that, and you know, Steve, jump in here, so that this corner is tied into this building and created that wall that the Historic Landmark Preservation Commission wanted on Wall Street without interfering with the existing cornice that's there. So the gray is just like what's below it, our apartments. And by stepping it back, it lessens the scale. Am I describing that well?
Yeah, that's pretty good. And then okay. If you show the next one along North Front Street, you see why the building steps up to four stories. It frames the
next one, Steve? I'm sorry.
The Fair Street Plaza. So okay. The idea is to have the same scale on both sides of the plaza as the Kingstonian.
I think I have it in the perspectives. That's back to here. This one?
Yeah.
So that's where the building steps up from three stories to four. So we have, a good balance at that corner where it flanks the entry to the plaza. So part of that up above is the backside of the apartments that front on Fair Street. So we cut away all the units that were on the top along North Front Street so we could have a more sensitive scale with the cornice, et cetera. So.
And they kind of line up with the peaks on the old Kingstonian building there, too?
Yeah, they do, with the ridge line. There's actually a floor space up there, so we may have a couple hotel rooms where we can fit them in.
So the existing brick building that is the Herzog Warehouse, the new building will be nearly exactly the same height, and so will the building across the street. It's a three-story building, but because of the pitch roof, it creates the height of a four-story building. And over here, we have a four-story building with a flat roof instead. So very sensitive to the height and what scale fits. You know, one of the projects that preceded ours was much, much taller and needed to be much taller because it was only working on with one side of the property. It didn't contemplate using the Herzog Warehouse side in order to get the density needed. So by incorporating both sides of the street, we get the pedestrian plaza, and we get the density needed to pay for the parking at a much lower scale and a much more reasonable scale to what exists in Uptown.
It's also similar to the Stuyvesant as far as the scale of the corner building. I think it's actually a story lower if you check the height on the Stuyvesant, I believe. No, they're both four stories.
Well, there's this little...
With a penthouse.
Right.
And... In the pedestrian plaza, that lattice work, is that how you transition from one style to the other?
That's right. That's the idea. So there's
what's
a trellis
that?
There.
What's behind that trellis? Are there windows or is it?
Yeah, those are the elevator cores. Okay. So there's an elevator tower there. And these trellises may become covered in greenery to further separate the historic district from the non-historic district. There's a thought of actually putting a demarcation on the paver pattern of the pedestrian plaza to show you have left the stockade district or you're entering the stockade district, depending on which way you're going, as paying homage to the history of a very defined walled city that used to exist. So these are ideas. Nothing's set in stone yet.
Anything found with endangered species?
No, there was a report submitted by Michael Nowicki. From Southbury, Connecticut, who did a threatened endangered species and had about habitat suitability assessment report. And he found no significant issues. Because the site is about approximately 2.5 acre, fully developed urban property, presently there's not a lot of wildlife potential immediately on the property. There's a few street trees going down Fair Street, and that's about it. There'll be more trees after the project is complete, but there are no endangered species or flora fauna habitat issues on this particular property.
There's a protected perimeter. I'm not sure where it goes.
Sue, wasn't there a question? Was there a question with regard to from one of the committees regarding is it the Stockade District where the delineation is, or
the Landmarks Preservation Commission, as part of their review, passed on a comment asking where the exact boundaries are of the Stockade Historic District. So
is that set by the federal government, or who?
It is being researched right now. Okay, between SHPO and other current municipal records. So we are confirming that. We're in the process of that.
Excuse me, if I could add a comment, Sue, along those lines. I didn't mention this earlier, but I think it was Hayes Clement on the both committees was wondering about the fact we have three different aesthetics, really, for the project. Part of that, again, along North Front is to identify the historic edge, and then the lattices, as Joe said, the transition, those are also the entries for the housing, but it's intentionally different so you can define the edge of the Stockade District, if you will, and then move to something different beyond. So that's very much the thought process behind why that's the way it is.
Correct.
So.
Can you speak to the trees, the removal of mature trees? As this project moves forward, where are we looking at as far as that goes? Is there a significant amount of vegetation that has to be removed, or
Dennis, you can speak to that if you'd like. I can too.
I mean,
you're saying nothing because I have a there's one comment from somebody from the public. They're saying that there may be a dozen healthy mature trees along the Fair Street extension. These trees will not be, they're going to have to be removed, right? Is it?
Yes.
Okay.
Trees that have to be removed. We could count them by going to Google Earth. I don't know if there's a dozen. There's a few along Fair Street Extension, and there's probably two along North Front Street. I could be off on that count. I'm doing it from memory. Those of you who walk it every day.
There's a number of street trees, whether it's 6, 8, 10, or 12, that are North Front, Fair, and Schwenk. But they're going to be replaced with more trees and vegetation than currently exists on the site by a significant amount.
Okay.
And we're not creating a green space park, but we are adding more landscaping than currently exists in that, in the context of the site, which is Fair Street Extension, yeah, and the Herzog parcels and the...
If you just look right here.
Yeah, right there, there's probably 40 or 50 trees that are replacing 8 to 12 street trees.
And on the other side of the building as well. So if you, and I don't have a rendered image of it, but if you were to look at a floor plan right here.
I think we show those up Fair Street too, Joe. Before you enter the parking, there's trees on both sides of the lower part of Fair Street. That one image shows.
Oh, yeah. You're both queuing me up here. You're right. I just have to find what page it's on. I think it's lower. But Dennis is correct. There's going to be significantly more trees. Here's the ones we were talking about a second ago. And here you go. Oh, this is showing some going up both sides of Fair Street Extension. Mm-hmm. And then there's a little... Okay. There you can see...
Those are the trees right there that line Fair Street on the one side of the street going up to North Front. And there's
nothing over here.
So the plan is to remove those and replace.
They will have to come down, but again, they're going to be replaced probably by a factor of 5 to 10 times more trees after the project's built. And if the project's not nicely landscaped, it's not going to work for the owners, or the it's not going to have the appeal.
More trees on that side, but it doesn't show them.
But it's very sparsely landscape at present. It's just a few, you know, a number of street trees going up Fair Street is pretty much it, on one side of Fair Street. And we'll be able to show you when we get to the site plan review phase, once SECR's over, show you a lot more detail the landscape plan.
Right, if we're successful in moving through SECR, the next phase is to develop a more detailed site plan, which would have a landscaping plan. It would have a count and location of exactly the number of trees that go on the site.
And the lighting details, which I know a comment was made, you know, all lighting will be LED here, but
all lighting,
dark sky,
exactly.
Dark Sky Society guidelines. All that will be layered in as the site plan process advances.
That has to do with migrating birds. Is that what the Dark Sky Society? I mean, is that a part of their?
No, it's
okay. I know that there's been
maybe a little bit, but it's basically energy conservation and reducing urban glare and light pollution.
Has any thought been given to impact on other community services like emergency services, school district, those kinds of things?
Yeah, so school district, I could tell you from the target market that we are planning for and from our experience of a building similar to this, we have no school-age children at all in the building. So in terms of impact of the school district, we do plan to offer an internship and we do plan to offer a scholarship as part of being good neighbors. But in terms of impacting their budget as a negative, no. We don't anticipate there would be. Unfortunately, enrollment has not been going in the right direction anyway, but we don't see this adding to the enrollment problem. As far as other services go, it's a brand new building, so I don't anticipate we're going to have a lot of nuisance fire calls in the building we operate, which is similar in size to this. In Poughkeepsie, we have a few a year. Someone leaves their pot on too long and there's smoke. We plan to use all electric appliances, not gas, for a couple reasons, one of which is energy as well as the environment, but another is very quite practically, we don't want anyone burning the building down. So we're designing the building in a way to minimize those type of calls. Now, security issues, we are planning as part of our project to have a full-time security person monitor the building to make sure that people are feeling safe and not add that burden to the police force. However, things happen, just like any building, and I'm sure things happen now in the parking lots that exist. So I can't say we're going to have no calls, but I don't see this being a burden to any of the emergency services.
Do you feel like closing Fair Street is going to impact emergency services?
I think Dennis can speak to that better than I can. He knows the traffic study better than I do. Is that fair?
Yeah, the traffic impact study that was submitted in July was prepared by Creighton Manning, one of the premier traffic planning firms in the state. And this board asked them to look at several things, 10 intersections in the neighborhood and how they function currently, how they would function in 2025 if the project wasn't built, but with just the increase in background traffic, which is based on past studies is increase about 2% a year. And then they layered in the project, the increased traffic from the project as far as visits. They also looked at pedestrian and bicycle traffic in these intersections, and the project includes the closing of Fair Street, that one block as a through street, although it will still be the entrance in and out of the parking garage, which currently serves as an entrance into the parking lot and the Herzog warehouse site and the former Uptown Grill, Elena's. So they looked at all that. They looked at the level of service. They looked at when the peaks were occurring at these intersections, which is really when they jam up the most, so to speak. They looked at and they evaluated the level of service at each of those 10 intersections for every movement in the intersection, left turn, right turn, through, from every direction. It's a very detailed report. I know it's been submitted, and maybe that you're going to choose to have another traffic engineering consultant look at it, but the impacts that they projected from the closing of Fair Street were very minimal as far as on the other intersections in the vicinity. And the impacts from they identified a couple existing problems with uptown traffic as well and what can be done to solve them. They did indicate that the intersection at Schwenk and the Kingston Plaza and First Street, which is signalized now, but it's not, the signals do not function. They're on a blinker. Would have to be reprogrammed and run as a normal signal with a pedestrian crosswalk signal as well. They recommended some things on Clinton Avenue and Westbrook Lane, Clinton Avenue and John Street, which are two problem intersections as far as level of service at peak PM hours, which they generally found to be from 4:30 PM to 5:30 PM on weekdays was when the peak traffic were hitting these intersections. They took counts around the clock, then they narrowed it down to the hours that saw the highest traffic generation at those intersections that tended to be 4:30 to 5:30 p.m. on weekdays. Weekends, totally different. The conclusions to the report are found on pages, I think, 32 and 33, but they did not show significant impacts from the project, both from the project traffic, which they estimated to be 183 trips, total trips in that peak hour, from the parking garage and the resident and the businesses. It's a good study. I mean, I have a condensed version and the full version, but it's very detailed, and they basically evaluated it to the extent that you asked at 10 intersections. I will say this also. The city has an initiative and a grant to do some work on Clinton Avenue, and I believe the first intersection that's going to be redesigned from a signal and pedestrian safety point of view is Clinton Avenue and Albany Avenue intersection. The problems with that intersection spill down Clinton Avenue northbound towards North Front Street and hit at Main Street. You can take a left without stopping, so that level of service is pretty good. But as you get down to Westbrook and John Street, as you know, it jams up, and it jams up at Albany Avenue and Clinton. So there were recommendations for the city, and it's part of the DRI program the city's involved with, on some things that could be done at those intersections to improve traffic. But this project's not really hitting those intersections in a significant way. Or is that closing of that half a block of Fair Street hitting that in a significant way?
I could just tag on to that. There is also a proposal for work on Schwenk Drive to do a design and engineering study. And the traffic impact analysis or report has been submitted to both the city engineer and to our superintendent of public works, both of whom have recommended that we ask for a third consultant, an outside consultant. They don't feel that they are qualified to review it for us. So that's we're working
fine
on that right now.
I mean, level of service, just so you know, for signalized and unsignalized intersections are rated A through F based on the amount of time you have to wait to get through that intersection and make your movement. And they're rated for every movement at that intersection. So all of that is in the report. Existing conditions, proposed if the project's not built, and proposed if the project's built as designed with the additional traffic generation and the closing of Fair Street.
And I do have tremendous respect for Creighton Manning Engineering, but I also respect the opinions of other department heads.
It is a highly specialized field. my field is environmental engineering with water, wastewater, stormwater.
Right.
I'm involved with traffic studies, but it's a silo. It's a specialty. And I understand why the city engineer would like an outside review.
Right.
And I tend to agree with that, too. Getting a third set of eyes on it, I think, is a good thing.
Okay.
All right, what else we have?
So, with the other city committees, without getting into specifics, but where did you leave off with, like, visual impacts and design? Is this something I know from past projects applicants get bounced back and forth. Is this something that we should have a joint meeting so that we can all get in a room and you're getting feedback from everybody at one time instead of bouncing back and forth month after month, or what?
Well, what we've hoped is that we now have the feedback because we presented this to everyone. Now, we did get it at separate times, but I think we've gotten a lot of feedback. And I'd love to hear any feedback from your group. What we'd like to do is, based on all that feedback, present our final version of options. And then based on that, I say quote-unquote final, based on those, make a decision as to what is the approvable drawing. And so that would then go back to each board. But it's from a procedural point of view, and the lawyers in the room can correct me.
Thank you.
We need to finish SEAKER before any other board can pass any approval. So getting their input has been great. One of the problems with the City of Kingston's current process is that you would go all the way through planning board approval, through SEAKER, through site plan approval, design the whole building, and then go to the Historic Landmark Preservation Commission before getting a building permit. So we've done a number of meetings with them in advance so that we have their input put into this design before we progress it too far along the line. They can't give us a vote until this board approves SEAKER.
And Joe just brought up a very good point that our focus right now is on SEAKER. Once we get through the SEAKER process, then we can move on to the detailed site development plan review process. Mike?
I would note along those lines, Joe is correct about the sequencing. We're in a coordinated review process, so this board ultimately makes the SEAKER determination, whether it's a POSDEC or an EGDEC, and in making that decision, they will consider all of the information that's been given to them from the HLPC, from Landmarks, from whoever else has commented. That's part of the process. And I would also emphasize that visuals do not necessarily stop after SEAKER. The case law in New York State is that visual impacts are also site plan issues, so they will certainly be considered during site plan too.
Right. In other words, you're not getting one bite at the apple on the visuals. We're trying to get the scale, size, scope, an overall look and feel, although we have very detailed design. But once we move past SEAKER, your final approval on the visuals will be the site plan approval. It's not SEAKER.
Well, I have to say that since we first started meeting about this, since you made the initial pitch at the LGBTQ presentation, a lot of work has been put forth in this, a lot of back and forth. I think we've whittled down and boiled down a lot of the key points that are important, that we think are important. I think with just a few more, for instance, the traffic study and maybe another little something to do with visual, I think we're down to a few key points now that that we're concerned about. So if does the rest of the board feel the same way about that I do, or am I not speaking for everybody?
No, I think that's good. I mean, the biggest opponent has been the visual. So
bring that in a little closer.
The visual has been a concern for most of the speakers, so I'm glad they are addressing that. So that would be a big issue. And the traffic study, you know, which will be good.
So if we can make arrangements to talk about, you know, to get the traffic study to another set of eyes so we can have a better understanding of how that, I'm not a traffic expert, but I got to leave it up to the experts. So it'll give me a better idea of where we are with that. You know?
I already have one possible individual that I'm going to reach out to.
Okay. And Dennis, having, you know, you haven't already talked to John Schultes and Ed Norman about this. They're on board with it too, about having to have another set of eyes look at this as well.
Right, and with water, sewer, stormwater, just to reiterate, the reports that were submitted, I believe, demonstrate that there's no significant impact. But all along the way, with site plan and with administrative permits, with public works, and the city engineer is going to have to sign off on the SWIP document before the stormwater permit can be issued by the state. There will be several bites at the apple all the way down the process as the project is designed in nitty-gritty detail. They will have approvals and permits to issue, and they're going to have to be happy. Besides the test that it's not a significant impact, they're going to have to be happy with the detailed design and all the background technical data.
And as this project developed from the original meeting, you've had to tweak the stormwater thing based on the configuration of the site plan, too. I mean, this is something that is ongoing. So, the traffic study is something that's weighing on me that needs another look at. So as far as the other items on the studies that were required, where are we with, have all of those issues been addressed? The other issues been addressed tonight? Have the questions been answered?
Aside from traffic and visual?
And I'm asking the rest of our board, too, if they have been answered. If not, speak up and we'll... If you're not comfortable with it, if there's something else that needs to be addressed, we can certainly talk about it.
Where are we at with size and scale as a board? I know we've discussed, and there's been some comments just regarding size and scale. Are we satisfied
That's
with...
That's part of the visual, which I believe you still want to take more look at.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, as I said, traffic and visual is...
Dan's behind you.
Oh, hi. Yeah, so you pop in over there.
We had discussed in the past scheduling a joint meeting with the HLPC so that the discussions and the deliberations aren't duplicative. What I would suggest, given the overlap here, is that we talk about that and we exchange dates so that we can set up that meeting.
Correct. The HLPC, and the Planning Board. And we're still waiting for comment back from the DOT and SHPO.
Correct. So if you are going to be looking into an independent review of the traffic study, we should be coordinating schedules with regard to those two issues.
Yes.
Keeping in mind the next meeting of this body and whether or not we want to schedule a special meeting to address this in October to continue that process.
We need you to use the mic because they
can't. We're talking about scheduling a joint meeting with Planning Board, Heritage Area Commission, Historic Landmarks Commission, so that we're all at the same table discussing the same things, what our concerns are. And so add to that.
And we're waiting for comment from the County Planning Board, New York State DOT, and SHPO.
Okay.
Do you have any timeline on those three agencies and when we're
Right now, I don't have one, but we can reach out to them tomorrow and again stress the importance of getting back.
But if we can follow, I mean, I'm sure you're going to try to do this as best as you can, follow in the pattern where we're going to have special meetings just for this project and not
Absolutely.
Have them at our regular meetings.
I mean, I believe because of the scale and the scope of this project, it deserves a special meeting versus trying to pull it into another meeting. Particularly if we combine and we have multiple boards.
Everybody okay with that? That sounds good?
Very much so.
I agree with that.
Okay. Then again, the project has certainly evolved from when, you know, we first started meeting together, and I, you know, I appreciate, and the board appreciates everything that you've done to address our concerns and the concerns from the public. Does anybody else have any other questions?
Anybody from your...
Anybody from the applicant side?
Make any more statements?
Mr. Chairman and Sue, I have a question on the seeker process. Part two of this long form has to be filled out at some point. Does the board want us... Boards do it differently. Some boards will say... submit a draft of what you think those answers should be. Some boards say, don't submit a draft. We're going to do our own draft with no draft submitted. There's not a correct protocol. It's up to the board and how the board would like to do it.
I would say that Mike and I have worked on multiple projects together, and if they want to submit a draft for review and consideration, then this board can certainly review it, take a full look at it along with our corporation counsel, and we would go from there.
I should have said too that the part two is not a determinative factor. It's checking boxes.
That's a box checking form. That's correct.
It has nothing to do with granting the determination of significance in terms of making a final decision. It's a box checking form.
Well, I would just request that before anything gets submitted by the applicant with regard to part two, that we have the joint meeting with HLPC and
yes,
HLPC, and we make that determination
good point.
After that meeting.
That's,
I appreciate your inquiry, Mike,
that's
but
fine.
Let's just take this
yeah.
one step.
That's
fine.
A good
okay.
point. Thank you.
Okay, so planning will coordinate with all of the folks that we've just identified, and hopefully we'll get something set up with a traffic study, get that hammered out too, and we'll...
Pardon?
And comments back, yes. And we will work to set up a special meeting in between our regular meetings. Sound good? Okay. So with that, I think we're ready for an adjournment now, or is that in line, in order? Riz, good?
I have a motion.
Okay, I have a motion. I'm going to make a motion to adjourn. Do I have a second? Second by Robert Jacobson. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carried. Thank you.
Thank you.